Well, so far this season, we've covered a disappointing football season and a disappointing basketball season. So let's switch things up to a team that is living up to the hype, the number three Syracuse Orange. SU coming into this week at 3-0 and number three in both college lacrosse polls. The Orange looking really, really good early on this season with a lot of talent and a lot of expectations coming into this season. I'm Owen Valentine, joined alongside Ben Shulman. And coming up on the Ostrom Avenue podcast, we'll take a look into how Syracuse has hit this 3-0 margin and the capabilities down the stretch. Maybe some Final Four predictions coming up in your future. It's the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Let's break it down.
From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Dom Adonna. Syracuse wins.
Finds Guerrier open, drives baseline, goes up and hammers it home. Quincy Guerrier, hello.
And it's intercepted. Andre Sisco.
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected. Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer. And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
The Orange take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point blank. Got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into episode one of lacrosse season here on the Ostrom Pod. Owen Valentine joined by Ben Shulman. Ben, let's just get right into it. What are the opening thoughts that you have from Syracuse Lax after, three pretty convincingly strong weeks out of the Orange?
One word, excitement. I'm really excited about this team. I mean, the Colgate game was a little shaky at times, and we'll go over those games more in depth. But just watching the win over Army this week and the way that the team has leaned on different guys to pick up wins, different scores in each game. I really think that this team has a chance to go far this year and maybe potentially, knock on wood, break that drought that Syracuse has had for now 11 years.
Yeah, it's kind of, we've always talked about here at WAER the 22 and how they've been able to have relative success without the 22 because of the depth and the ability to have so many different guys step up. And it seems like this year that it's the best of both worlds. You've had seven goal games from Scanlon as the 22 to step up and be that guy, but you've also got a game like what you saw this weekend against Army where that's not the case, and you've got other pieces that are able to step up. The midfield can step up. There's so much depth at the midfield, so you've got the one guy that can do it, but you've also got that supporting cast of five, six, seven other guys that could step up when their name is called. So it's going to be something that Syracuse can definitely rely on, and they already have started to rely on early in the season.
Yeah, I think the addition of Scanlon has been so important. I mean, I know obviously with seven goals in the first game, he practically won that game for the Orange, and then he had nine in his first two. But the amount of attention that he commands from the defense, especially with questions about the health of guys like Tucker Dordovic, I really think that Scanlon is not only going to score a ton of goals himself, of course, but really help everyone around him score a lot more. And I think we're already seeing that with Jamie Trimboli.
Yeah, you saw that. I mean, let's just dive into that Army game a little bit, because that Colgate and the Binghamton games, I mean, you can only take so much away from them because, I mean, they are obviously probably the two worst teams on Syracuse's schedule right now. And so to look into that Army game a little bit more, Syracuse gets down 5-1. And it didn't look pretty, to be completely honest.
It looked
bad. The defense kept them in that game despite allowing the five first half goals, but Army's got a good offense, so to hold them to five and keep that manageable early on was the reason Syracuse was able to come back, and then the offense started to really figure itself out in the 2H.
Yeah, they looked really sloppy at the beginning, to be honest. They were getting bullied physically by Army, and also there were a lot of penalties. I think the Orange just weren't ready necessarily coming into this game for everything that Army was going to throw at them. It took them about a quarter, maybe a quarter and a half to get used to the game. And one of the big issues with it was that they kept going a man down. Syracuse went a man down four times in the first half and then didn't go down a man a single time in the second half. And that was huge. When they were trying to claw back into that game, they needed to be able to have as many offensive possessions with the full force as possible. And whenever they were going a man down, they were really dominated. But I think you have to look at a guy like Jacob Fopp, who wins 16 faceoffs in 19 tries. You know, that is incredible. And I think two of his three losses were early starts, too. Like, he was dominating at the faceoff, at the X, and, you know, I don't think that there was much that Army could do when Syracuse was able to come out with so many possessions at X.
Yeah, you look at a team like Army who, I mean, weeks 1 through 3 was, I mean, the case in point, incredible defensive unit in college lacrosse. They've got two ranked opponents on the schedule in their first three games. And yes, the third was against New Jersey Institute of Technology. Not really a relevant opponent, but when you look at teams like UMass and Rutgers and then NJIT, to allow a combined 9 goals through 3 games, this was the defense. And, I mean, the Marist game, I think we were talking about before we got on. Yes, Marist comes out and beats Army 17-9 and really has that breakout performance. But I think it might have said a little bit more about Marist than it necessarily did against Army. But what it did show is how vulnerable Army can be if they're not able to win the faceoff battle and get those additional possessions, because Marist did held them to, I believe, 38% from the faceoff X, whereas in those first three wins, Army was up close to 60%. And then Jacob Fopp comes in and just exploits that issue, and he wins 16 of 19 faceoffs and gets Syracuse those extra possessions, because Syracuse was even down early on when I believe he won 5 of 6 to open the game. So to see that Syracuse fell into a rut even with those possessions, you could only imagine how much worse it might have been if he was not winning the faceoffs at the clip that he was.
Yeah, there were a few guys. It was kind of like the rest of the team was getting ready, and there were a few guys. It was Fopp, and then I think another big contributor was Drake Porter. Mm-hmm. I mean, Drake Porter in net was incredible. He had 10 saves in the first half, set a career high with 18. Even lamented a little in the post-game press conference that he was receiving harder shots back home in Canada, although I think he was referring to playing box lacrosse as opposed to field lacrosse, but I took it as a compliment anyway. But, you know, Drake Porter, he was shaky a little bit in the Colgate game, but, you know, since about the second half of Colgate through Binghamton and now the Army game, he's been a brick wall, and I really think he might be, you know, one of the best keepers in the country.
Yeah, definitely the ACC, maybe the country. He played, I might say, his best game in Orange, I think. Yes, it was a career high in saves, but he really just, I mean, he killed it. He was outstanding, especially down the stretch. There were a couple of early goals that I thought, you know, maybe he could have gotten a stick on and maybe he could have saved, but when you look at the number of shots he faced in that first half, to have a 0.67 or a 70 or a 67% save percentage in the first half, it really just does go to show that he was getting the job done. So although there might have been one mistake or one or two shots that he possibly could have gotten to, he was the reason Syracuse was still in this game. Him and the defense, I thought, played pretty well early on, and then down the stretch makes a huge save with Syracuse up 9-7 that I think without it could be that momentum shift, that shift that brings Army back into it after Syracuse has started to just beat them down and beat them kind of into oblivion. They weren't necessarily too relevant in the second half, only 2 goals scored by Army. It was exactly what Syracuse needed, because I think if you let them score with, what was it, 3-4 minutes left on the clock, a little bit less, it's now a 9-8 game. You've got that momentum starting to shift back to Army. That game could go in a multitude of directions. That was the save that made this game. And without that save, I think Syracuse could drop to Army.
This is Gunnar Phillip. He runs down the right wing side, screen left, dumps back in the middle. Manown gets his hands free, feed to the doorstep. Silva stood up by Porter. Ball is loose in the Orange clear. Drake Porter takes that one away from Silva from point blank.
Yeah, I think definitely if Army scores again, I mean, even though Syracuse came back, this game was very much still up for grabs after the Orange tied it at 5-5. Army took a 7-5 lead. The Orange had to come back again. And aside from Porter, of course, you also have to look at two of these midfielders. The performance that Trimboli puts in is what everyone's going to remember. But Brendan Curry was awesome. Brendan Curry had two assists on two of Trimboli's goals, scored two goals himself. And it felt like, you know, whenever Cuse needed a goal, Trimboli popped up. But whenever Cuse needed like a scoring chance, needed to get the ball inside, Curry was able to find guys cutting towards the net.
And that's the experience out of him. You can really kind of see that calm, composed aspect of the way he plays. And to be able to find and distribute like he was, I thought he played a really sophisticated game. Gets 4 points, two goals, two assists. But I thought it was a little bit more than that. Just kind of providing that really, I mean, to just go back on the words I just used, that experience and that composure, to never get too frazzled, to be able to continue to play their game and play this new offense that Pat March has put into play, and really just let Syracuse do what it can. And that was to really pop off a little bit in the second half, 7 goals in the second half for Syracuse, and it really sparks the 4-goal comeback that they had. They were down 5-1, and I will say that the key to this game, and we always have the privilege of being able to go back and kind of pinpoint where this game shifted, when you look at Curry's goal to end that second quarter.
Curry gallops behind the net, fakes to his left, goes right doorstep, shoots and scores! There it is, Brendan Curry with the muscle and the score. It's 5-2, 30 seconds to go, first half.
I think without that goal, Syracuse has no chance at coming back. You go into the half down 4. It's not that same situation. You've got a little bit of momentum. You kind of bring that spark with 30 seconds to go in the second quarter and say, you know what, we're right here. We're only down 3 goals. We could be down much more the way we've played in this first half offensively. If we can come out and just get anything going in the second half, it'll be all right. And that's exactly what they were able to do. That goal was the difference for Syracuse, because without that, I don't think Syracuse has a chance at a comeback.
Yeah, I think that really revived the offense in general. I mean, just from a psychological standpoint, I think looking up at 5-2 and looking up at 5-1 can look like very different things to a player, especially if you've just been shut out in a quarter, as opposed to, fine, you scored one right near the end, you can go make a run. And then, of course, the guy that we were eventually going to get to talk about, Jamie Trimboli, just took over this game. And it's the second he was overshadowed in the first game where against Colgate when he scored 4 because Scanlon scored 7. But, you know, Trimboli now with 9 goals in just those 2 games, I believe he scored 1 against Binghamton as well.
Oh,
2 against Binghamton, pardon me. So 11 on the season. You know, this is a guy who obviously could score, but maybe we didn't expect to be scoring at this rate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's going to be one of the major offensive contributors going forward. I thought in the first half, Army, not just Trimboli, with all the Syracuse attackers and midfielders, were really pushing people out of the middle. The Orange had created a couple chances from coming out behind at X and then going low high. And I thought that they were going to do that more, but Trimboli kind of just forced himself into the middle and made a lot of shots on the run, which was what Army wanted to get out of Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And he was just better. He said, even in the post-game press conference, he said that Coach Desco had wanted them to start shooting high, but he was stubborn that he just snuck too low anyway, because he saw the chance and he had a couple great bounce shots. I just think that Trimboli, you know, Curry kind of put the charge into the team, and then Trimboli ran with it like the Energizer Bunny.
And we're talking about two midfielders right now as the savior for Syracuse's offense, which is kind of what maybe you weren't expecting coming into the season, but at the same time you weren't not expecting it. When you saw Scanlon being up leading the attack for Syracuse, you knew that the midfield was as good as they are, and both midfield lines are really, really good. But obviously that first line, when you look at Trimboli, when you look at the way Curry played, it was so perfect. And we're leaving out a guy, Tucker Dordovic, who, yes, he has struggled a little bit coming back from that injury. I don't think he's quite where he would want to be right now or where we expected him to be right now, but the goal that he scored was really clutch for Syracuse, a really big unassisted goal down the stretch for him. And it was just those three were really the reason that Syracuse was in this game and was able to propel themselves to victory. And that's not a knock on the attack. The attack didn't play their best game, but I think that was definitely what Army kind of went into the game trying to do when they did really well, was shutting down those three, especially Scanlon. And when you look at the way the midfield was able to step up, that was the thought process when you saw how strong both of these two units are, that if the attack is struggling, the midfield has the ability to be that offensive presence, that offensive firepower. And that's exactly what they showed on Sunday against Army, and they've shown it moments throughout the season as well.
Yeah, I think there's both positives and negatives to take away from the offensive performance against Army. I think obviously you have to be happy that when your main guys are being shut down, you can turn to midfielders, or you can turn to maybe not your most typical scorers, and they can come up and win you a game. But I also think there is a bit of validity to saying, you know, Chase Scanlon was really invisible in that game. And I think that a lot of that was to credit to Army.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think this is a guy who needs to be putting more than one shot on goal in a game.
Yeah,
I think he and Rafis, for two guys that can make such a massive impact in one game, to be so invisible to me was a little frightening. It only worries me if it becomes a trend. If they go out against Duke, you know, and Scanlon scores six goals, then no one's worried.
Exactly.
But Army did show an ability to shut down some of the main guys that I think other teams could potentially try and mimic or copy in the future.
Yeah, it was – I like what you said there. It's not an issue unless it starts to become a recurring trend. They both have played – I mean, especially when you look at Rafis, when you look at the numbers that Scanlon has put up, they're both doing fine. They've got 12 points on the season, 10 points on the season, 12 for Scanlon, 10 for Rafis. They're doing the job. And when you look at the fact that they both had 0 points this weekend, it goes to show that you've got – two guys that before that were averaging 6 and 5 points respectively, they're going to be able to break out of this. I think this is more of a, you know, you've got to tip the cap to Army. They came in and shut down two of the options for Syracuse. But when you've got a team with the most preseason All-Americans in the nation, there are too many options for you to be able to shut down one or two guys and really be able to obtain success in terms of the scoring output and the final score. And that's what Syracuse showed. Army was able to shut down and make a couple of big names invisible. But when you've got as many big names as Syracuse does, and you've got the ability to have Trimboli step up and to have Curry step up and play these really, really strong, really, really impressive games, then you're not going to be able to shut down the entire unit. When you look at the 6 that you've got, and maybe even say the 9, when you put in that second midfield unit as well, there are so many options that as a defensive unit, it's nearly impossible to shut them down as a whole.
Yeah, and you just talked about the depth, and that's one thing. I'm kind of wondering, I watched the highlights back after the game, of course, and we talked about Tucker Dordovic's goal, which I thought was a beautiful goal,
yeah,
by the way. But he came up laboring with so much depth right now, and Rutgers coming up potentially in the future after Hobart. Do you think maybe Dordovic sitting a game or two to get fully healthy with the depth is a good idea? Or do you think, you know, there's such few games in the season that you need him in there to make sure you win every single one?
Yeah, I want to look into, or maybe I think that all depends on whether it is a health thing or if he's just a little bit slow coming back right now. Not necessarily hurt, but he's just not quite in the groove yet. I don't think he's played poorly. I don't want to send that mantra out, but he's definitely not where I think all of us here at AER expected him to be coming into the season. We saw that 1-2 punch in Dordovic and Scanlon to be kind of that top two guys in the nation in terms of being that duo or one of the best duos in the nation, maybe outside of Penn State and that incredible duo that they've got going over there. But to see these two kind of struggle, and not struggle, but not have the success game to game that you would have anticipated, especially when you look at Dordovic, does maybe question, is it an injury thing? Is he not quite where he wants to be in terms of health-wise? If he's not at 100%, maybe you do switch him to the second line for a little bit, give him a little bit less run, and still have him in the game, not to the point where he's not playing, but you limit those minutes a little bit and kind of go game by game. If you're winning a game against Hobart or a game against maybe a lesser Johns Hopkins right now than in years past and a little bit of a lesser Rutgers, then you've got a 3-game stretch looking forward where you might be able to find some time to sit him out a little bit. And if it's not an injury thing or that's the case, then I'm fine with him still playing. But if it is not, if he's not 100% or if he's not where you'd want him to be, then I'm very fine. And I think it's a smart move to look at the schedule ahead and see that there are going to be opportunities for you to limit his minutes and make sure that he comes back healthy when you do face a string of, what, 5 of 6 to close out the season, our top 12 teams right now. So you've got that big stretch. You want him at the highest clip that he can be firing at then.
Yeah, cause, I mean, this is a team, at least right now, and almost every single year, that has, you know, real championship aspirations. So you just, I just think about later in the year, let's say we were approaching a game like Syracuse Duke or North Carolina or something like that. If he wasn't able to go, I feel like we might be looking back at some of the games earlier and being like, did he really need to play against Binghamton or, you know, something like that. But he, I do agree. I don't think his play, like, I think it's been good. I don't think he's been bad.
Correct.
But I just think that we have lofty expectations. And to a certain extent, that's also, like, I recognize that that's why I said something about Scanlon. You know, Scanlon didn't score one time. Like, oh, gosh.
It'll be okay.
You know, he scored 9 through the first 2. It's not, like, the end of the world. But at the same time, if this team wants to get where it needs to go, it does need to have everyone healthy and firing on all cylinders, because they easily could have lost to Army. I think, you know, it was a great game, and the second half was awesome, but the first half was not. And that's still, you know, that's still, it's the same with Scanlon. Only if it becomes a trend does it really worry me, because it was such an isolated thing. But, you know, the Orange are not going to roll over all these teams. Mm-hmm. As good as they have been, they're going to need everyone, and hopefully Dordovic is either healthy or just feeling more in the groove going forward so that he can contribute more to the Syracuse offense.
And to shine a little bit more light on this Army game, we are going to turn to our WAER play-by-play Cooper Boardman, who was on the call for Army, was on the call for the season opener, to kind of look a little bit deeper into some of the intricacies of this game and start to break down Syracuse moving forward. We now welcome in Cooper Boardman, who was on the call on Sunday, Syracuse versus Army, top 10 matchup in the Carrier Dome. Coop, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. First time on the pod. This is exciting.
First time on the pod. I'm sure we'll get you back in sometime soon, maybe even for an entire episode, not just a brief segment. But to start things off, that Army game, one of the biggest takeaways that we had was the fact that Chase Scanlon kind of became a non-factor. So what did you see maybe defensively from Army or out of him that was the difference, because he was so successful those first 2 games?
Yeah, so this guy walks out in his first game, puts up a career-high 7 goals. And then in his second game, I actually think this kind of went under the radar, he put up a career-high in assists. He had 3 assists. Mm-hmm. He tied his career-high in that. And the focus for Army was very, very clear. Do not let Chase Scanlon get the ball with his feet set. We talked with Joe Alberisi in the week leading up to the game, the head coach for Army, and he said as much. He made a joke that was something along the lines of, yeah, I mean, if he gets the ball 10 yards out with his feet set, you might as well just walk back to the faceoff already. So Army's entire defensive game plan, and we saw it especially in that first half when Syracuse couldn't figure anything out, was, well, let's take away Scanlon, and let's also take away Griffin Cook working from X, which is why their stat lines look the way they do with zeros next to them in the point totals. But here was the thing. Syracuse figured it out. They realized that that wasn't going to work all day long against one of the best defensive teams in the country, and they found other ways to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, the other ways, obviously looking more towards the midfield unit. So what does that say to have a guy like Trimboli step up and have that really strong day, or, you know, any other midfield tier, because you've got so much depth at the midfield, to come in, step up, and really have that day and pick up for the slack that the offense had kind of left?
I think it's funny because you hear preseason Syracuse has midfield depth. You know, you hear things like, all right, that second line, they could be a first line anywhere else. And no one knows what what that means, if that makes any sense, right? And, like, they walked out there, and the attack was being essentially shut off. It wasn't exactly a shutoff of Scanlon necessarily, but clearly that was the defensive impetus. What are we going to do? We're going to shut off the attack. And that created these one-on-one matchups for these midfielders. The first line took advantage. They put a short stick on Jamie Trimboli, and he ate. I mean, it was so easy for him, because you have to pick out, and that's where this team is so dangerous. Because here's the thing. Army has to decide who they're going to pull. So they put long poles at points on Brendan Curry and on Tucker Dordovic. So that means a short stick matchup for Jamie Trimboli, a guy who was tied for the team lead in points last year. Forget it. And he showed it as much with his 5 goals. And then they said, okay, we're gonna take the poll. We're going to put it on Trimboli. Curry got the shorty matchup, and he scored 2 goals. Dordovic's lone point of the day was a goal, and it was with the short stick matchup. Same thing with David Lipka on the second line. If they can prove that they can do this consistently, and I think that they can no matter who they're playing, boy, you got to feel good about what this offense is going to be able to do.
Exactly. So even when Scanlon doesn't put up those numbers that you'd expect, it doesn't mean he's doing nothing because the attention he draws is just so valuable for the midfield.
This game has, you know, in the zeros next to Chase Scanlon's name or Griffin Cook or any of those other guys, those zeros have nothing to do with what those guys
exactly.
did. What they did opened up opportunities for the middies, and they took advantage.
For sure. And when you kind of look at that and you see the impact that Scanlon can have in a non-factor game really just goes to show how much this depth could be an asset. So when you look towards, you know, the second half of the schedule, when things pick up and you've got, I believe it's 5 of your last 6 games against teams currently ranked in the top 12, which is a pretty tall task. So that depth, the options to kind of revolve back to where we were last year talking, there was no 22, oh, anyone can step up. But now it's the same thing, and there is a 22. So you can have Scanlon go off, but at the same time, there are so many other guys that can step up day in and day out.
Yeah, this isn't a one-man kind of offense, and that's okay. And the knock for a long time was, well, there's no 22, and that's absolutely true. The 22 manifests itself in other ways because teams key in on Chase Scanlon and what he can do distributing the ball, what he can do obviously from that slot area on the right side where he is at his most dangerous. And Syracuse, and you know, depth is something that is shown in players, right? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's a second line midfield that's great. Even the second line attack came in there. You know, Owen Siebold saw some time in the latter stages and took care of the ball well, things like that. Where the depth also manifests itself is in the style of offense. And John Desko came into the press conference and, you know, he was asked 3 different ways, essentially, what was the difference in the second half versus the first half? And they came out in the first half and he said something to the effect of Army was limiting what we've seen from the Pairs offense over the first couple games. Pat March's new offense, Syracuse working from the wings. So what did they do? They worked from the invert. What does that mean? That means go from X, let Griffin Cook kind of be the distributor and work it up top. And Syracuse scored 3 goals in that second half and that big comeback in the third quarter, essentially the same way, from goal line extended, straight up the alley, turn around and put the ball in the back of the net. And there are so many great shots on this team. The other part of this that probably gets failed to mention is that 9 goals offensively isn't where you want to be at moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
This is against an Army team that has been top 10 of the country in defense over the last 7 years. This is an Army team that came in giving up 6.5 goals per game.
Yeah.
And they do that against them. There were so many more goals that just missed too. Syracuse must have hit like 3 crossbars in that game. You got to feel good, and I don't care. You got to feel good.
One last point on the offense. We were kind of breaking things down, and as you know, we have the privilege to be able to pinpoint certain moments. Syracuse is down 5-1. How much value in terms of momentum shift, in terms of kind of bringing a positive scoop into the locker room, was that Brendan Curry goal to close out the second quarter?
It was great, and it was the Curry goal on top of a defensive stop in the final 2 minutes. It was, oh, they can score, you know, when he put that in the back of the net. And seriously, because it had been that way all day long. And I think, and John Desko alluded to this in the post game, that when they saw Curry was going to dominate the short stick matchup, they said, we're going to get the ball in the hands of our midfielders and let them make plays. Tucker Dordovic looked better in this game than he has in all the other couple of games. He's going to continue to look better. Jamie Trimboli has shown, I mean, he had 6 goals in the first 2 games. He had 5 against Army. And then Curry is so explosive, so fast. If you put a short stick on him, his hands are free just about every time.
Owen Valentine joined alongside Cooper Boardman here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Cooper, we talked about the offense, now to switch it defensively. You've got the man between the pipes with a career day, an all-time day for Drake Porter. I want to say he started slow, which is not true, but I felt like there were 1 or 2 he might have been able to get to, and he started to get a little bit frustrated. But then there's just that goal from Curry kind of picked him up, picked up the entire momentum, and then he comes out and just has an incredible second half, including in probably one of the most important stops of his career with about 2 minutes left.
People are going to talk about the second half because that's what you remember in the comeback and all of that. How about the first quarter?
10 saves?
10 saves in the first quarter. This game could have been 8-1, 9-1. Yeah. This game could have been gone. And what he did on that defensive end was awesome. There are a few things here. The first is one of the things that was talked about preseason. And we talked with Quint Kestick preseason, mm-hmm. you did. And he made the point that Drake Porter needed to stop runs. And they had so many situations last year. They got down 9-1 at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame was peppering shots, and Porter was just unable to stop runs. It was like, I think it was 6-2, 7-2 against Virginia, even in that game in the Dome that ended up close at the end. He stopped the runs against Army. And, yeah, this Black Knights offense isn't as prolific as you're going to see in some in the ACC, certainly not a Virginia, certainly not a North Carolina. But he did something in that Army game that he failed to do outside of maybe Duke last year. And that has to feel really, really good. That's an all-American caliber performance from a second-year starter.
And we're complaining about, you know, the fact that he let up those five goals and Syracuse is trailing. But I think without that first-half performance, it's a much bigger problem for Syracuse. You're going to be down even more. He has 10 first-half saves, a .67 save percentage, 67% in terms of saves. He was the reason they were still in it, and then he comes out and has that second half. But the surrounding pieces, I think, also had a really strong performance to limit an Army attack that's not that strong. But once again, they're playing without their strongest asset in Nick Mellon.
And they've got some dudes, too. I mean, they're not as comprehensive of an attack in offensive midfield as you're going to see in the ACC, but they've got some players. Brendan Nickturn is an All-American caliber player. He had 4 points, and you would say, oh, well, Brett Kennedy, how do you give up 4 points? Two of those points come in transition. It's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. This team is going to need Nick Mellon. I don't think Brett Kennedy one-on-one as the top cover guy is going to suffice. And that's not a knock on Brett Kennedy. It's that as you get into ACC play and then you're starting to play against Virginia that has two attack options that are going to be All-Americans, the same in North Carolina, the same in Notre Dame. You have to make stops like that, and that's why Nick Mellon's going to be important. But you have to feel good about players like Nick DiPietro. Andrew Helmer had a huge couple of hustle plays. This is a defense that's in a great spot right now. This is an offense that is clicking, and they're gonna find ways to win. It's going to be fun to watch.
And Mellon's return still kind of up in the air, but you've got
he'll be back.
And he will be
very
back.
Clear.
Correct. But the exact return date still kind of unsure right now. But Syracuse with a three-game stretch that is very, I'm going to say, feasible to win three more and get to 6-0. A deflated Johns Hopkins, Rutgers, not quite a top-tier team. Hobart could honestly be the best opponent in this three-game stretch, which is just astonishing to hear. But to take, you know, your knowledge right now and give us a season outlook as to where this team could go, because that's where we're going to propel in the second half of this podcast here today. Where is this team headed, and what is the ceiling for this team?
Yeah, we learned a lot in the Army game about what this defense can be and that in the offensive depth. I want to highlight, before I get to the season, I want to highlight that Hopkins game. One of the things that Syracuse struggled with last year is being a little bit too occasional. And what I mean by that mm-hmm. is that they would have off days. They would get down 9-1 at Notre Dame, a team that it could play with, you know, that it should have been closer to make a big run in the second half, and it just wasn't enough. That Hopkins game is going to be very telling. First road test at all.
Mm-hmm.
Against a team that has the athletes to play with Syracuse. And that was the thing. Army didn't necessarily have the skill. They had the athletes, but not the skill. Hopkins has both. I don't think they're as good as Syracuse, but that's a game, you know, if you want, it's not even a trap game. It's just a hard game.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I mean, you look at what the ACC is. Syracuse at 3, Notre Dame at 4, UNC at 5, Virginia's at 6. Virginia's going to drop, though, after the Princeton loss. And maybe a tight game against High Point as well on Tuesday. Syracuse has as good a chance to win the ACC as any of these teams.
Yeah.
It also has as good a chance to lose the ACC as many of these teams. The one thing that's going to carry SU through is that offense, and they're just going to continue. But I also think the thing that's really going to carry them through, because everybody can score in college lacrosse at this point, is Drake Porter. And if Drake Porter can be a very good goalie in a conference that hasn't had very good goalies over the last couple of years, that is a big, big, big push on that defensive end that puts them not only in the ACC title conversation, but as the team to beat in that situation.
Cooper Boardman, thank you so much for joining us. It was always a pleasure, and we can't wait to have you back.
A blast, as always.
Another thank you to Cooper Boardman for bringing us a little bit of more depth into that Army game, and then starting to take a look ahead at the upcoming schedule for Syracuse, a little bit of a weaker three-game stretch in the next coming weeks, obviously, as opposed to this really backloaded Syracuse schedule that you're going to see. But we'll start with those first three and not necessarily group them together because they are difficult-ish opponents. Johns Hopkins, obviously a little bit lesser than what we've seen, but Hobart having a strong year. They've just breached the inside lacrosse poll top 20, and they're right on the fringe of the coaches poll top 20 right now. They're a better team than in years past. I don't necessarily think that you can mark this down as that blowover game that you've seen historically out of these two teams in the past couple of years, but this is definitely going to be maybe not a close game, but I think it'll be an interesting, not challenge, but I think there are going to be, you know, some struggles and some intricacies that you can definitely look into post this game.
Yeah, well, I think it'll pose a great challenge for the Syracuse defense. I mean, the Statesmen are some of the best scorers, at least so far, in the country. No team is averaging over 20 goals per game, and Hobart's averaging 23 goals per game. So they're well ahead of a lot of the other teams in the country, and obviously some of it has to do with competition, but a lot of the competition that they've been facing is similar to the stuff that Syracuse is seeing. So I think from a defensive standpoint, there will be a challenge there. I'm not saying that this is going to be, you know, the most back and forth, but I think it'll be a high-scoring, entertaining game with definitely still a chance for Hobart to come in here, upset Syracuse, and take the Krauss-Simmons trophy home.
Yeah, per lacrosse reference, Hobart currently has the number one offensive efficiency in the country, which means that it is test time for Syracuse. It is going to be one of those, you know, difficult games for Syracuse to be able to test that defense, especially because the Mellon situation is still up in the air. We've seen Syracuse go back-to-back weeks now without Mellon. We're not necessarily sure when the anticipated return is, if that is for Friday, if that is for a few games later. But it's going to be the test for Brett Kennedy to step up and continue to be the number one guy on this defense, and another test for Porter. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Syracuse can respond to that, because they do have the defensive pieces, but this is a really, really high-powered Hobart offense that has scored goals in their first few games at a really uncanny clip.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent we find out how great this Syracuse team is. Against a team like Hobart, you know, you don't have maybe as much juice going into that game as you do against Army. It could be a bit of an emotional letdown, but the great teams are going to find a way to beat the teams that they should beat. And Syracuse, I would like to see them win this game handily if I'm going to believe in them as a team to push through, you know, the ACC tournament and then eventually the NCAA tournament going forward. I think that Hobart is a better test this year than most, and that will be something that will make this game more exciting. But at the end of the day, if this really goes down to the wire, it'll be more of a negative for me for the Orange, regardless of whether they pick up the win.
Correct. I think despite Hobart's kind of offensive firepower that they've shown early on, there is a lot to be taken away from this game. And as you were saying, I think the outcome really will say a lot about this team. If this is a close game, it's a little bit alarming for me, because despite Hobart being a fringe top 20 team between, you know, 18 and 22 as you go from ranking to ranking, when you look at this team and you look at the expectations Syracuse has and the personnel Syracuse has, they should still win this game relatively convincingly. I'm thinking like 4-6 goal win, maybe something around that margin. If they can hit 4+ goals in terms of victory margin, I think that is a fine result for Syracuse. But if this is a close game, comes down to the wire, a 1-2 goal game for the majority of the fourth, then there are some concerns to be taken away, because unless Hobart is far better than we can see, I don't think they're as good as you might anticipate. Yes, they've had that offensive success, but there are huge differences, as we've always been able to see and what we've been able to take away, between that number 15 to number 20 team in the ranking and that number 10 to number one teams in the rankings, and anywhere in between there, there are huge jumps, especially in lacrosse, because I think that you should still be able to have a convincing win as the number three team in the country over a fringe top 20 team in Hobart, because if not, then maybe the expectations could be a little too high for the Orange.
Yeah, this is a Hobart team that I'm not saying they don't deserve to be there, because they do, because they got the votes.
Yeah.
But they're on a run right now. Syracuse is ranked based off preseason and expectations. Hobart is ranked off of performance. And, you know, if you're going to be one of the better teams in the country, you have to win nearly every game. And this is not, unfortunately for Syracuse, because of how difficult their schedule is, this is not going to be one of your more difficult games, even if it is a ranked team. According to Inside Lacrosse. So I think you look at Hobart, and then you look at the next two games too, Johns Hopkins and Rutgers. And if you're the Orange, you really, you don't have to, but you really almost have to start 6-0 because of the difficulty coming up after.
Well, when you look at the games that Hobart's played, yes, 20-plus games in all three matchups, but they've played Canisius, they've played Siena, and they've played Colgate. Not really top-of-the-line opponents, so I think that Syracuse will definitely, you know, bring them back to earth in terms of these offensive performances, and whether they keep them to under 10 goals, I would definitely say that Syracuse can keep them under 20 goals for the first time this season, but it's going to be interesting to see how a team who really hasn't played any top opponents or really strong opponents comes out and plays against Syracuse in the Dome, the last game in the Dome for this season for Syracuse, as they're going to move to playing a couple games at CNS, and then the rest of the schedule basically is on the road, which is a different beast in itself for Syracuse. But can Hobart come in and maybe just have that sort of, this is the game this season, that they're going to come out and play a top team and really come out and play with that same ability that you've seen in terms of numbers-wise, not necessarily in terms of Hobart is this good because they're blowing teams out like that, but can they come in and have that day? It's going to be a big test for Syracuse to kind of come in and shut them down early, because I think if you can get a couple of stops early on or control the face-offs in the first quarter, you're going to be able to establish a lead and kind of put Hobart away early on, which is going to be the key for Syracuse to getting that win.
Yeah, and I think establishing that lead, or at least scoring early, will not be an issue, considering the defense they went up against last week compared to the defense they'll face this week. And it's nothing against the Hobart Statesmen defenders. You know, it's an adequate defense, but in comparison to one of the best defensive groups in the country, I think that Scanlon, Dordovic, Rafis, Trimboli, whoever's out there, Lipka, it's going to feel like the biggest field they've ever been on in their entire life compared to the swarm that they got from the Black Knights defense last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as someone going to watch the game, what I would want to see, I want to see Chase Scanlon really kind of get back into a groove.
Mm-hmm. You know, reestablish that dominance.
It's not that, you know, you need 5-6 goals out of him every game, but it's just getting the level of consistency. I think it was 19 games in a row he had scored in until last week. So you just don't want to see, you want to see him get back, as opposed to turn this into some sort of midseason slump that then gets out of hand.
Yeah, I definitely think he'll be able to break out of that, I mean, one-game rut that we love to harp on a little bit. But I talked to Quint Kesnick preseason, and his thoughts on Scanlon were obviously that he's a top-tier player, really strong player, but he did expect a little bit of regression here at Syracuse playing without Pat Spencer, just because of how much attention Pat Spencer took over at Loyola last season. So I don't think it's going to be a terrible regression, but I don't think that it's going to be the same offensive numbers that you might have seen last year. And he's proven me wrong in that first game against Colgate, and then at the same time you've seen it against Army. But it is going to be interesting to see how he does work on his own and how he is able to create for himself. Because when you look at his stats last season, over a third of his goals were assisted by Pat Spencer. So Pat Spencer was the reason that Loyola offense was able to thrive, and one of the main reasons Scanlon was able to have that same success. I'm really curious to see how he creates for himself or how he works with the new personnel, because he does have a lot of talent surrounding him once again, not necessarily in one name, but in a multitude of top-tier names instead of, you know, the Towaratan winner being beside you. So I want to see him kind of elevate and be able to even create for others or create for himself. And this game against Hobart is going to say a lot about him, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Hobart attackmen, I will say, do present a good challenge when you look at both guys that are going to be, you know, really the main scorers. It's Eric Holden, the senior, and Jason Knox. Holden could be in the running for the Towaratan Award. I mean, he's had a really good start to the year. He would need to continue it, but his name has been listed in certain places is up for it. And then Knox, I mean, we talk about Scanlon 7. Knox scored 10 against Siena. 10. A triple hat trick and then one. I mean, you know, craziness. So you look at that, and in one hand, it's impressive. In another hand, it looks a little stat patty, but, you know, I think that this will be a great matchup with really talented forwards on both sides. I agree, we're not going to see, you know, as much from Scanlon this year, but he's also kind of occupying the role that Spencer had a little bit on Loyola, where mm-hmm. Scanlon, you know, just the fact that he is Chase Scanlon, honestly, yeah. To a certain extent, he's getting more attention.
For sure.
Which is opening up lanes for Trimboli. It's opening up lanes for Curry, Rafis, everyone else involved. And I think while he might regress, you'll see the overall offense succeed with him in it.
I think his statistical regression will not necessarily indicate the way he played, because I feel like, as you were saying, and as we've kind of seen with Army, he does take so much attention. He's going to be the defensive focus of so many opposing teams, opposing defensive units, that is just going to be, you're naturally going to regress just because that was not him last year. The focus was not him. And so he was able to have that freedom. But I don't think that the regression is going to be a knock on his performance or his talent or anything along those lines. It's just going to be a different challenge that he has not yet had to face in his young collegiate career. So that'll be, I'm going to say, fun to see him kind of try and overcome that and work alongside that. And I also think it's going to be interesting to see, how can you react? How can you overcome this increased defensive pressure, this increased attention? Because that's going to be something that is going to be one of the keys for Syracuse and one of the personal keys for him. Can he create space for himself? Can he benefit from the fact that he's getting those extra looks? The opponent's top defensive player in on close quarters, and can he take that and be able to use that in his advantage to find some more assists, to distribute the ball a little bit better this season, and really to help the Syracuse offense as opposed to himself individually?
Yeah, he had 3 assists against Binghamton. Yeah. That was a game where he showed great playmaking ability. I think, you know, as we get near the end here, I kind of want to open it up to a broader question, because this is our first lacrosse episode. Mm-hmm. So I know we're only 3 games in, but if you had to set maybe a prediction or an expectation for this team record-wise, or maybe how far you think they're going to make it in the tournament, you know, what do you think we're going to see from this Syracuse team this year?
Well, I'm going to revert back to that Quint Kesnick interview I talked about earlier. Kesnick said 6-0, and a pretty confident 6-0, and that was when Johns Hopkins had a lot higher expectations still this season. So I'm definitely going to say they can easily get to 6-0, and then you look at that very difficult backdoor stretch for Syracuse. You've got Duke, who is currently number 12, Notre Dame, who is sitting just one spot behind Syracuse, Cornell is a top 10 team, UNC is a top 10 team, Virginia is a top 10 team. The entire ACC outside of Duke sits inside of the top 10. It's going to be a very difficult, excuse me, I said Notre Dame was one behind Syracuse. It goes Syracuse at 3, North Carolina at 4, Notre Dame at 5, and then Virginia dropped from 2 to 8th. That is a very difficult stretch. I feel like Syracuse goes above 500 in those games. You've also got Albany intertwined in there. So I think Syracuse finishes this season out 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-2, I'll say regular season. Maybe you bump to 11-3 with an ACC championship loss, or 13-2 with an ACC championship win. But I think regardless of that, this is a team that is confidently in the NCAA tournament and a team with Final Four caliber potential and Final Four expectations when you look at what they currently have and what they have started to prove and what the preseason vibe was and what the vibe continues to be for Syracuse. I think saying that the expectation should be anything short of Memorial Day weekend would be underselling this team.
Yeah, that compares, you know, really well to maybe the 2017 team who finished 13-3. I think that's a reasonable expectation and one that I share. You know, this team should be shooting for banners and trophies this year.
Definitely.
This is a roster. You don't always, you know, you've seen the last couple of years, even though they've been great, you don't always get a roster that you feel like you can go win a championship with. And I think right now, a lot of guys inside that locker room feel like the Syracuse Orange can take home a banner this year.
Yeah. That is the vibe. I feel like that is the goal. When you look at the drought championship-wise that Syracuse has been in, this is the time. This is where you finally, it seems like you've got the pieces, and that is where the vibe is, the trend is heading, where a lot of the media kind of sees them at right now as a Final Four caliber team. Obviously, there's a lot of time between here and there, but there is that expectation and there is that ability, and I think it's a very deserved Final Four caliber kind of mantra around this team. Do you think they get there?
I think they get there. I think just because I have strong expectations for them in the second half of the season, and I think I know they're playing two games in Cicero, but I think if you play the entirety of the second half of your season on the road and come out well, that you're incredibly well tested to go into tournaments and win tournament games. So I also think that we'll know a lot more as the weeks progress and we see some of these other teams that are in the ACC that are in the top 10, because, of course, you know, if North Carolina and Duke and Virginia are great, then there's only one more spot. But I think right now, especially after watching that Army win, I think that the Orange will be playing for the national championship this year.
All right.
Which is a bold one, but I think they'll be playing for it, not for sure win.
Playing for the national championship, Ben Shulman alongside Owen Valentine, or I always reverse that. I'm Owen Valentine. That's Ben Shulman. Our next lacrosse coverage here on WAER will be Friday night. Syracuse and Hobart with the Krauss-Simmons Trophy on the line in the Carrier Dome. Our coverage starts at 6:30 with Countdown to Faceoff, and then basketball this weekend to kind of bring you back into things. Basketball tonight against Pittsburgh, and then this Saturday with UNC in the Dome. It's that time where, you know, basketball is starting to dwindle out. Let's shift that focus to lacrosse, because there is a lot to talk about and a lot more positive light that we can shine here and have some fun. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We'll catch you next time.